Well, one thing about Joey, you know, Joey doesn't share food. That's something he has pre-decided that he will not do. He will not share his food with you, which is what we'll be talking about a little bit more in detail, hopefully about something more consequential than food. But we started a couple weeks ago talking about our decisions, about how we can make better decisions so we live life with fewer regrets, perhaps maybe even not one letter of regret. If you were here with us first week, you'd know what that means. And pretty much the concept is simply this, is that if we can pre-decide what we're going to do in a given situation before our emotions are impacted by the situation, before our temptations can guide us or push us in a certain direction, if we can pre-decide when I'm in this situation, when I'm faced with this scenario, this is what I will do. When I'm out to dinner on a date and she tries to grab my food, Joey has already decided he doesn't share food. It doesn't matter if it's a little baby named Emma or a beautiful girl sitting across from him. He's not sharing his food. That's just something he has decided. So when we talk about decisions, though, the reason why this is so important is because your decisions have the greatest impact on what future you will experience. Far more than what happens to you, it's what you choose to do when circumstances hit you. That's what's going to determine your future. That each decision that we make has both a direction and a momentum to it. And so when you make a decision, it is pushing you in a direction, and it is building up momentum with each decision, which is why we oftentimes think about those big, consequential, life-altering decisions that we make. But so often, those decisions are already made, already pushed in motion, already set in the direction by all of the small decisions that lead up to it. And so if you show me your decisions, I can show you your future. We also talked about last week about how before we even get to the idea of pre-deciding something, if we can decide what we value, if we can get our values perhaps in line with God's values, we can experience life the way God intended us to experience it. Because every decision is an expression of our values. What we value is expressed through our decision. And so, if I can firm up what I value and I really know what my values are, that will already push me to make better and wiser decisions. And so last week we had some homework. If you missed last week, I encourage you to go back to it because this week is building off of that, where we take our values and now we move them into, all right, what are my parameters for life? So what are the boundaries with which I will live? It says over in Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28, that a person who lacks self-discipline is like a city without walls. Back in ancient times, walls were your defense. Your walls allowed a city to determine what could come in and what would go out. They would have a gate at those city walls, which was heavily fortified and defended. They had all different kinds of ways of making those better fortifications. And so they could determine what came in and out of the city. And it was pre-planned. It was pre-decided. This is going to be the boundary of our city. This is where we are going to set up our perimeter. And we are going to decide what comes in and what goes out. And he says that's like a person who sets up through self-discipline. So every boundary is a matter of discipline, that I'm doing this ahead of time, and this is what I will or will not do. And it's like setting up a wall around your life, around your marriage, around your emotions. And you're setting this wall up and saying, this is what I will allow in, this is what I won't allow in. They also serve as, another metaphor might be, they serve as navigational markers. If you've ever done any boating out in the intercoastal waterways, you'll see what are called channel markers. There's red ones and there are green ones. Now, in every other place other than the Lynn Haven Inlet, this typically means you stay between them and you're good. In the Lynn Haven Inlet, I don't really know what they mean because there's nowhere safe to boat in that inlet. Because I've run aground on a paddleboard in that inlet, okay? I'm not kidding. My paddleboard draws about 8 inches of water, and even there, you can't see the bottom, and bam, when you hit something on a paddleboard. But typically, the channel markers say, if you stay between these channel markers, you will be fine no matter where you go. You can go wherever you want inside these channel markers. These are sort of the boundaries that you want to stay in. Now, you go outside the channel marker, you may or may not be okay. There's no guarantees. But somebody's come along and said, as long as you stay between these two markers, you'll be in good place. So the question is have you set up those channel markers for your life? Have you set up those boundaries? In different areas of our life, we call them different things. So while you're boating, they're channel markers. With our society, we call them laws. In a marriage, you might call them guardrails. In your finances, you'd call them budgets or spending limits. So we call these things different things, but really all they are is you're pre-deciding, this is how far we will go. This will be the boundaries with which we will stay in. And if you stay in these boundaries, you know there is safety. You go outside of those boundaries, well, you don't know what's going to happen. Now, The problem with setting boundaries or limits is two things. One is our culture, and the other is our nature. Our culture pushes you to go as far as you can possibly go. Always push the boundaries. You know, see what you can get. If you're holding back, then you're missing out. You only live once. There's always this fear of missing out. They're always pushing you to go further, to test the limits. See what will kill you. Back it off one step, and anything beyond that's just not living, man. You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. So go out and get all you can. Do whatever you can. Enjoy life. Live it to its full. Don't miss out on a single thing. So they send you that message. But then they also come right back and say, well, now you went too far. Well, when did I go too far? Well, you crossed a line. Well, where was the line? You didn't tell me there was a line. They always are pushing you to go further and further and further, but then all of a sudden, whenever you cross some invisible, imaginary line that they don't even know where it is, but once you cross it, oh, well, now that's illegal. Well, now you need to resign. You're canceled, right? So they'll push you and push you and push you, and the second you go over that line, all of a sudden they'll chastise you for having gone too far and doing something you shouldn't have done. And this hasn't changed. Cancel culture is nothing new. This whole pushing you and then coming back on the limits, nothing's changed over the years. You go all the way back to the movie Grease, okay? I know that came out, in the late 70s, early 80s, but it was set in the 60s, right? It starts off and Danny comes back from his summer vacation and all of his friends want him to tell about his experiences, right? Tell me more, tell me more. One of them asks, did she put up a fight? I don't know what that's all about. They're like, yeah, tell me more, tell me more. And so he says back, you know, to these questions, he says back, where is it? I had to write down. I don't know the lyrics by heart. I had to look them up. I want to make sure I do that so my man card's intact. He says back, well, she got friendly down in the sand. She was sweet. She just turned 18. Well, she was good. You know what I mean? Okay. All right. What does he mean? Well, I think we all know what he means, right? Now, that's scene one, okay? Scene two, we move over and we focus in on Kenickie and Rizzo, right? What happens there? They get pregnant, or at least they think they get pregnant. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, well, you're going to have to drop out of school, right? And everybody freaks out on them, right? So scene one, it's tell me more, how far did you get, what did you get? Come on, did you put up a fight, what all happened? Tell me more, give me all the details. Scene two is, oh no, you guys crossed a line. What's that all about? That's culture, right? We have a culture that sexualizes everything to our teenagers and then wonders why something would happen, right? We market them sexually. We show them videos and movies TV shows. All, you know, everything that's geared towards teenagers is always highlighting that kind of element in a relationship, and that's okay and that's acceptable, and everybody's doing it. Their peer group pushes them towards this. We design and develop apps to make it easier for them to do things in that realm and to push them down that path. And then all of a sudden, they cross some line, and we all go, oh my gosh, did you hear what happened to? And you're surprised? You push and push and push, and the second they go over that limit, then all of a sudden you freak out on them like they never should have done it in the first place. Really? That is our culture. Our culture is pushing you to take everything to the limit. Now, the other problem is our nature. Our nature doesn't want to cross the line, but we want to live right up on the edge of it, right? Like, how far can I get over this edge before I fall? Right? I think that's about it right there. Okay. All right. She's going to be like, oh no, this is sermon illustrations about to get real. That's our nature. We want to get right up to the edge, right? You know, what's the maximum dosage I can take? Don't give me two pills if you can give me four, doc, right? Tell me what's going to kill me. Back it off one pill. And that's the kind of pain I'm in right now. I need the full dosage, right? I don't want to be held back here in some way. Don't tell me what the speed limit is. Tell me what I'm going to get a ticket at, right? I mean, is it true at 8 you skate, but if 9 you're mine? Is that, I don't know. Ask an officer, really. What will they let you get? I don't want to know what the speed limit is for new drivers, right? For somebody who's got somewhere to be, tell me what I can get away with. We want to know what is the actual real limit with. We want to go right up to the edge. Now, if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, there's something very unique, something I didn't expect. First of all, when you get up to the Grand Canyon, they do have a fence around the edge. But it's not a very big fence. And it's a fence that you could climb on. And there's not enough park rangers to tell you to not climb on said fence. And that's shocking to me because everywhere else that our government has set something up, they make sure if there is a danger to you whatsoever, you're not allowed anywhere near it, right? There is better security at the monuments in Washington, D.C. than there is at the Grand Canyon, okay? Now, what's even more incredible is if you ever go to the Grand Canyon, there's like the main parking area that everybody goes and looks at the scenic lookout. Well, if you have a little more time to spend, you can drive along the ridge of the canyon. There's a road that's called like a canyon edge or something like that. And you just go, and there's different places where you can stop and kind of take these little scenic lookouts. When you go to the scenic lookouts, there is no fence at all. I mean, there's not a line. There's not like something spray painted, nothing. It's like it was when the first settlers first saw it, right? I mean, that's what it looks like, or when the natives, you know, first discovered it, whatever. That's what it looks like, and you can go and enjoy that uninhibited beauty. The problem is, it's straight down. If you've never been to the Grand Canyon, I don't know how I can express to you, it's 1,000 feet or more straight down. I'm not talking like a gradual incline. This isn't something you would roll down if you went over. You would splat, not roll. That's what happens if you go over, period. I don't mean how, it's just the nature of it. And so I asked a park ranger at one of the stops, I said, how often does somebody go over this edge? I mean, it's not a question of if, it's how often does somebody go over the edge? He says, well, we've had 5 so far this year. And I'm like, and you don't have a bigger, you don't put up barricades or anything, right? It's just have at it. He's like, well, you know, we want to have the park be able to experience it in its natural beauty, and we've got that place if that's what you want. And so I started thinking, you know, if you were there with your kids, how far back would you want them to be from that edge, right? Are you going to play this game? Is this the game you're going to play, you know, on the edge, right? Because with a lot of things, when you're talking about limits, if you go over the speed limit, typically nothing happens. And even if it does, okay, you get a ticket and you pay that. It's not like as if it alters your life forever, right? But there are some limits when you cross them, you only get one shot at that. There's some limits when you cross them, your kids are sleeping in a different house from you from that point on. There are some limits when you cross them that your reputation is over. And so the question is, how far back do you need to put this, right? You know, if you were going to put some caution tape up in your life, I'm not very good at it, by the way. Hopefully this doesn't break April's speakers. Yeah, how far back do you put this at the Grand Canyon for your kids? Now, maybe you don't have the caution tape, but you'd say to them, you know, see that tree right there? You don't go past that tree. Why? Why do you say that? Because you know the nature of kids are going to forget about the danger ahead. And so you put this safe boundary line back here, and you've already pre-decided that your kids are not allowed past this boundary. Why? Because this is going to kill them? No, because the closer I get to the edge, the more dangerous it is. And if they go over the edge, that's it. There's second chance there. I would rather put the boundary back here and have my kids doing this junk, right? I'm still behind, right? Okay? Because there's nothing happens here, right? But up there is certain death. And then your marriage and then your finances, if you don't have those boundaries, if you haven't pre-decided where to put these boundary lines, you're setting yourself up for life's biggest regrets. You need to think through, what is the future I want to have? What decisions do I need to make now to ensure the future I want to have? And we're going to be looking at several different areas. And in these areas, if you don't pre-decide the decisions you need to make for the future you want to have, that will lead to some of your life's biggest regrets. Period. End of story. There's no doubt about it. And so, this week is just like last week. You got homework, and so I'm going to put this up on the screen. I encourage you to take a picture of it. We're just going to go through a couple of these different areas and begin to look at what do we need to do to put up walls around our city. Now, the poster child for this is a guy named Daniel. Daniel was a very intelligent, well-schooled Hebrew. He was living in the area of Jerusalem, Judea, when the nation of Babylon came in and conquered the southern kingdom. They did it in 3 rounds. The first round, they took the best and the brightest. The second round, they took a lot of the skilled labor. The third round, they took anybody who was worth taking that was left, and they left basically just the people that nobody wanted. Those were the people they left behind. So the very first round, Daniel gets taken. He's recognized for his leadership skills and his intelligence, and so the king selects these folks out for a special program to become future leaders. But along with that, they need to follow the diet, the regimen, the exercise, and the routines of the others who've been selected for leadership. Well, it says that Daniel had resolved he wasn't going to eat the king's food. So he looks at it and says, you know, this doesn't line up with my faith and the values that I have, that I've been raised with, and some of these things that I'd be eating. See, Joey's got his food issues. This is where the tie-in. Joey has his food issues. Daniel had his food issues, and he was not going to eat. Daniel doesn't eat that food. That's where Daniel was at. He said, Daniel doesn't eat that food. And so when they want him to eat it, he says, no, I'm not going to eat it. But the key there is it says, Daniel had resolved. In Daniel chapter 1, verse 8, it says, Daniel had resolved not to defile himself with the king's food. That word resolved is used several times in Scripture. One time is over in the book of Genesis where God comes to Abraham. This is long before Abraham and Sarah have their son Isaac, long before he even moves to the promised land. When he first has a conversation with Abraham, God says to him, I have decided that you will become the father of a great nation. Now, this is 20, 30 years before he even has his first child, right? What God is saying is, I have pre-decided this is what's going to happen in your life. So I'm pre-deciding. It's the same word. The literal translation is to put down. Probably the best way I would explain this in the English is, have you ever heard of somebody saying, I'm driving a stake in this, I'm planting a flag, write this down, I am doing this, chisel it in stone, this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, write it down right now, I guarantee it, this is what's going to happen, right? That's the picture he's saying here. Daniel had resolved. So when peer pressure mounted, when the pressure was put on him, there was no question for Daniel. It wasn't like he had to wait in the moment to see how he felt. He had already resolved this is what he was doing. What's also interesting in the book of Daniel is Daniel mentors three other guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Later on, people come after them, and they attack them for what they worship, and the king comes to him and threatens him with execution. If you continue to do this, you'll be thrown in a fiery furnace. And if you notice what they say over in Daniel chapter 3, find it in my notes somewhere, 3 verse 16, it says, they replied to the king, we don't need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we're thrown into the blazing furnace, God's able to deliver us, and he will deliver us from you. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your king, that we won't serve your stinking gods or worship that silly image you've set up. I don't think they said stinking or silly, but my translation sometimes off. But basically they say, we're not doing it. And even if we die, we're still not doing it. Now, do you think that they waited for the moment to see how they felt to make that decision? Or do you think, like Daniel, they had resolved, this is what we're doing, this is what we're not doing, and I don't care what you say, I don't care what the consequences are, I don't care what you threaten me with, I am not. Joey doesn't share food. I don't worship that altar or that idol. I don't eat that food. In the same way Joey has that resolve, these are decisions they've made ahead of time, I'm not doing it. And so what I want to challenge you to do is to think through, for some of these, it's something you'll have to do as a family. Some of these things are things you need to do for yourself, is to think through all these different areas. What are things I can pre-decide now what I will or will not do? And so we'll start off with marriage. In marriage, you might call these guardrails or boundaries or rules, things like when you read in the scripture that Adam and Eve were naked and unashamed, that they had no secrets between them, that they had full intimacy between them, what does that look like in your marriage? What does it look like in your relationships? Do you share passwords? Are there things that are off limits? Does your spouse know the password to your phone, to your email, to all of your accounts? Or is this something, or is there something that you hide there? To what extent are you fully open? Now, I know some of you are like, listen, man, I've got security clearance for my work, you know, I can't do this. I'm like, okay. There's workarounds for everything. Just know that secrecy is the environment for sin to flourish. Adam and Eve, as you know, as soon as they sin, what do? They hide and they cover up, because secrecy is like a petri dish for sin to grow. And so to the extent to which you want to have secrets in your marriage, to the extent to which you are vulnerable and dangerous to this. Now, you can go whatever path you want to go with this. I'm just letting you know, you created for yourself an environment where sin is bound to happen if you go down the path of secrecy, and you got to decide to what extent are you going and what areas do you not or will you? And there's workarounds for everything. Are you going to talk about, or what are acceptable interactions with the opposite sex when it comes to communication, whether it be video chats or phone calls or texting? What is acceptable interactions that you would have with a member of the opposite sex? I've told you before, when I'm texting somebody, Michelle knows. I'll tell her, you know, hey, I'm texting so-and-so right now. Or, hey, I texted this person today. Here, if you want to read it, you can. I don't ever want to look at my phone and find a surprise. Never don't want to be like, who's this? And name a name. I don't ever want to have that question. She should know before she ever opens. That's just my personal, that's a decision I've already made. A decision I made for myself. I'm not telling you what you have to do. You decide what you want to do. The question is do you want to affair-proof your marriage? You know, determine the future you want to have and set boundaries or limits to make sure that happens. Well, of course, I don't want to have an affair in my marriage, but have you set up limits to prevent it? 40% of marriages or more go down that path. And if you don't set up the boundaries, you'll go down that path. And someday, here's the thing will happen. You may look at some of these boundaries and say, Steve, this is so restrictive. You know, I think this is, there's a lot of freedom here that you're wanting to sort of take away in the process of this. And I think we should, once again, you want to push limits, you want to push boundaries. But let me ask you this question. If you get to the place where you've gone over the edge on something, how much have you begged God to be able to go back in time and make a different decision? What would you be willing to do to go back and make a different choice? You'll find a lot of people all of a sudden at that point want to limit their freedoms and want to put up a boundary. Why not do it now? Figure out the future you want. Set up a boundary in line with that, because in the areas that you don't, you're setting yourself up for your biggest regrets. Work-related interactions, travel, meetings, you know, what are your policies? What are your personal policies on this? What do you do and what do you not do? For those of you, probably a lot of y'all know, if you're a woman and you want to meet with me, it'll be in this building. It'll be in a room that has a window on it, and somebody else will be in the building, period. There's no question about it. That's not a question. I don't give teenagers rides home, and when I do, I am on the phone talking to somebody, if not video chatting with somebody, period. It's only happened a handful of times, but there's something about my profession and that whole thing. I don't want even the accusation of it to happen, right? And so if somebody were to ever say anything, I've got somebody who can say, well, this person was on the phone with me from the time this person got in the car to the time they got out of the car, so I have a witness that knows everything about the interaction. That's just a personal decision I've made. Now, see, that's a workaround, okay? You might say, well, but, you know, for my work, I have to X, Y, or Z. What's your workaround? What can you do to pre-decide that this won't be an issue? For some things, you got to make sure an accusation can't even be. It's not enough just to say, I'm not going to. I also have to sometimes say, I can't even have the accusation of. I can't even have the possibility of. You get me on this? So I want to make sure I set myself up in those situations. What's your stance on encrypted apps? You know, Signal and other things like that that you can text or you can call with that can't be figured out. I mean, is that okay? Is that allowed? What purposes do they serve in your relationship? Do you have a persona non grata list? I don't know Latin. No. That means this person is not allowed entry. Are there people who are not allowed entry? There is a no communication with this person. Ex-boyfriends, ex-girlfriends, those kind of things. Like, these are not people who are acceptable to be having conversations with or meetings with, right? Flat out. Do you have a watch list? Watch list is where you come home and you say, honey, this person kind of gives me the creep vibe, okay? And, you know, I can say this to my wife about a girl. I can say this to her about some guy, right? And, you know, and this has happened, this comes up. You know, there are some people you just look at and you go, I just got a bad feeling about her. I don't like her talking to you, walking around. I don't like him. I remember first time I ever had this sense was, you know, 20, 30 years ago in my first marriage. And I was this guy. I was like, he just kind of has that vibe of like a guy who would, you know, ask you out if you were willing, right? And I remember her being like, oh, I don't think so. He just seemed like a nice guy. Yeah, that's kind of what I mean, you know? That's kind of what I mean, right? Sure enough, found out 2 months later, that's the kind of guy he was, right? Trust your intuition on that. Because they're on the watch list doesn't mean they're persona non grata. It doesn't mean you can't have any interaction with them. It just means this is somebody who you just need to have a better, you know, close eye on, right? And so, and if I get that vibe about a woman, I want Michelle to know. Because if she sees me talking to that girl, I want her to have a look. I want to have a second set of eyes on this, right? It's called affair-proofing my marriage. Now, you can look at all of this stuff and say, wow, you're really putting the line. Mike Pence came out years ago and said, I won't even ride in a car with a woman. I won't even have an alone car. Be like, oh my gosh, that's so restrictive. Really? We're going to get on somebody in politics who's got morals? Really? Come on. The whole thing about pushing limits, right? And then as soon as you cross some limit, what do we want you to do? We want you to resign. You're not fit to be president, okay? All of that comes out. We have two messages that are being sent. The question really is not about what anybody else thinks you ought to do. Based on who you are and on the values you pull out of God's word, what limits do you need to set to ensure the future that you want to have? Because when you don't, you're setting yourself up for life's biggest regrets. Okay, let's say you're not married. What are your dating don'ts? There's things you don't do. I don't kiss on the first date. I don't kiss on the third date. I don't kiss till we've been dating 2 months. I don't know. You tell me what your don'ts are. Where do you set that boundary for yourself? You know, the old question of, well, how far is too far, Steve? Come on, what's the Bible say? Really? What are you asking me? How close can you get to this edge? You really think you can do that in any sort of moral temptation situation? Do you have a curfew? Do you have a don't stay out past? Well, not since I was in 10th grade. Really? Seems to me that old saying Mama said, that, you know, nothing good happens after midnight, that doesn't expire when you turn 20 or 30, right? So Michelle and I, whenever we would get to that time where a curfew hit, we would play that Chris Stapleton song that says, "You should probably leave." It's kind of funny. He's talking about adults. You should probably leave because I know you and you know me and we both know where this is going to lead. Really? He's not talking about 10th graders there, is he? He's talking about adults. It doesn't matter what age you are. There are still those issues. I don't have sex until what? What do you put there? Well, I know what you're going to say. Well, you know what I'm going to say, but do I even need to say it? Do you even need, there are some things you don't need God's word. Just ask yourself, ask somebody else who's got a story, ask somebody else who's got some scar or some wounds, what this should be. What we're talking about here, setting limits to avoid our biggest regrets. Hey, tell me what some of your biggest regrets are. You think this is going to make that list? It probably is for a lot of people, right? So why not set the boundary somewhere a little farther back than what you think you can handle, because we all think we can handle a lot more than we really can. Do you date somebody who's married? What kind of dumb question is that? Okay, I've been in the dating scene as of recent. I know what it's like. Nobody dates when they're married. At least that's not what they call it. They're separated, right? Okay? And separated means anything from, well, she stormed out last night, and I don't know if she's coming back, so I guess I'm separated. All the way to, well, it's been 7 years since I've seen him, and I can't get legally divorced because nobody knows where he is. Okay? There's a big spectrum in there. What's your standard? What is your decision on do you date somebody who's married? You know, if they're still married in any way, shape, or form, what's your standard on that? When Michelle and I first met, she was still legally married to somebody. And I looked at her and I said, I won't touch anything other than your foot. And that's true. That was it. I don't have a foot thing. That's not us. I know you people. I know you people. And no, it's just, that was it. Moving on. All right. Sorry, baby. These things take a weird turn sometimes. Do you have something where you say, I don't ignore red flags? Or do you just see them and drive right on them and make excuses for them? Have you pre-decided that you don't tolerate disrespect? And you may put some list of things that you don't tolerate. You know, if you don't have that, you'll make compromises. Why? Because it's deep down, you don't want to be alone, and they're such a great person. And other than that, just one little thing, or that one little incident that keeps on happening, but I just, you know, just one more time. No, either you do or you don't tolerate this stuff, right? So you decide this ahead of time, before your emotions are involved. Do you think Joey waited till he gets on the date to decide whether or not he's going to let a girl eat his food? No, because Joey doesn't eat, like, Joey doesn't share food, right? Joey doesn't share food, right? If you don't have that kind of resolve, your whole life is just pushed across the table, flat out. All right, money. We're going to talk a lot more about money and budgets later on this year, another series. I won't spend too much time with this, but I highly encourage you, figure out what you spend, because most of us don't know what we spend. So for the month of February, track your spending. Is that just? I'm not telling you put on a limit. Before you even put down a limit, you need to know, what are we actually spending? So just put down, you know, track your spending for a month so you can begin to see. What limits do you have on spending? Do you have set limits on what you spend on kids' birthdays or kids' friends' birthdays or, you know, your spouse's birthday or for vacations? Or do you have set limits for what your home project spending limits are going to be? Or is it, you know, if it's for the house, it's, you know, sky's the limit. I'll go back to passwords. Do you share passwords on Amazon? Oh, see, now we're getting real, right? Uh-huh. So when with getting married this year, Michelle and I merged our Amazon accounts, and so in doing this whole thing, bottom line, we had to share one account password for like 6 months. It's interesting how that changes your psyche, because there are no, I never thought about, you know, sharing Amazon, but these packages just came to show up. Oh, no, the wrong address, that box is old. I think that was something that came like 2 weeks ago for you, right? Anyways, moving on. Do you have a purchase order system in your marriage? Like when you're at work, right, there's like if you spend over a certain amount, you got to get a purchase order for that and you got to get it approved before you buy it. Do you have a spending limit that you talk about before you spend it? Remember when I first got married back in 2000, the spending limit was $75, right? That was a lot of money. And then I remember when gas prices went up, and I was like, oh my gosh, gas is over 75. I can remember calling her, I'm like, hey, Melissa, do we need to talk before we get gas now or what? How are we doing this? But, you know, can you just come home with a 85-inch big screen TV without having a conversation first? You know, do you have? But hey, if you don't talk about it ahead of time, then why are you getting mad on the back end? Decide beforehand what you will do, because when you don't, it leads to big regrets or at least a very controversial issue. Eating. Do you have preset limits for what you will or will you will not eat? I don't eat fast food. I don't eat meat that's been on a roller all day. I stay away from the three white killers. No, not those three white killers. I'm talking about sugar, salt, white flour. You know, to what extent do you try to limit your intake of those? Do you need to cut them out completely? Do you need to limit them? Do you need to cut down on those? Do you need to be aware of those? Do you know how much you eat? Do you know how many calories you're intaking every day? You know, if you don't know, hey, city without walls. Person who lacks discipline. It's impossible to have discipline if you don't even know where your perimeter is. People and boundaries. This is where you set up and you say, this is what I will or will not allow. You need to have those at work. You know, to what extent can your work ask you to stay late, work on the weekends? At what point do you file a formal complaint? Or is this something you just complain to your friends about all the time? At what point do you need to get on Indeed and circulate your resume, because this is not a good place for you to work? If you don't have standards, if you don't have boundaries that you set up, you're in for a life of looking back and saying, why have I wasted the past 6 years at this company that was never going to promote me, never going to give me a cost of living increase, and yet I know I'm talking to all you teachers right now, but what you know, why? How long do I want to stay at this if nothing's ever going to change? Other place for boundaries, in-laws, extended family. You know, when they come to visit, do they stay at your place or do they stay somewhere else? To what's your policy on borrowing or lending money to family members? Will you accept, you know, borrowed money? Will you lend out money? You need to talk about that. This is a conversation you need to have. When they come for a visit, how long do they stay? It's an old saying that family's kind of like leftovers. After 2-3 days, things kind of spoil and go bad. That not every family, but some families can be like that. Just throwing that out there. What rules do you have in your house? Do you have house rules? I can tell you, like, for instance, we sit down for dinner, no phones, we start eating at the same time, and everybody stays at the dinner table till everybody's finished. It's just a house rule we've set, right? I don't have a Bible verse for that, but based on the future I want to have and the kind of family I want to have, that's something we have for that. When you're done with the space, clean up your space, right? You know, leave it a mess while you're there. I don't care what the living room looks like when you're sitting in there. You know, have a good old time. That's what the house is for. Live in it. But when you leave the living room, it should be ready for the next person. It's just rules. You know, what's your house rule on yelling and teasing and put-downs and slamming doors? Do you have any rules on that? Is it something you discussed, or is it just whatever happens, happens, right? I don't want to wake up one day and look at the family that I have and go, how did I get here? I want to pre-decide the direction and the momentum our family has. That's what pre-deciding is all about. You can set these limits. And when somebody crosses one of those limits, crosses one of those lines, you can look and say, hey, this was left out. What's our house rule? What do? We leave it nice for the next person, right? And it's easy. You've pre-decided what you will and will not do. Substances. Have you pre-decided what you will or will not do? Are narcotics a hard no, or are they you're not sure yet, right? You know, if it's not a hard no, it's probably something you might go down at some point. What's your view on painkillers? You know, well, as long as the doctor prescribed them, or are you the type that says, you know, I know this can be an addictive thing, so as soon as I can get off of this and get back to a ibuprofen or Tylenol, I will, even if it means I got to tough it out for a day or two. I don't want to be on these any longer than I have to. If you've known somebody who's been down the path of painkillers, it will change your predisposition on that. What's your stance on drinking? You know, maybe for you, drinking's okay. Maybe for you, drinking's not okay. Do you have a drink limit? Do you decide before you go to party how much you will or will not drink, or if you will or will not drink? And do you stick to that? You know, pre-decide. Two's my limit, period. Or, you know, I'm not, you know, drinking at all. Do you decide beforehand? Because if you don't, you can't decide after your second beer if you're going to have a third, right? Because you're already in the moment. There's already momentum in that. If you haven't already decided, some of those decisions, it's always easier to not, right, than to stop. It's always easier to not than to stop. Let's see. Personal standards. Do you have just a list of things that you do or not do? I mean, for Joey, he doesn't share food. That's his personal standard, right? Do you have issues, you know, do you have some lines of integrity about cheating or stealing or lying? Do you have some lines that you've drawn? Says, this is what I will or will not do. This is what I, you know, a compromise I will not allow. What are those sort of pre-decisions? Time limits. Do you have a sense of, you know, you're starting a new venture. Say, you know, I will give this 2 years. I'll give this new business 2 years. And if it doesn't work in 2 years, then we'll reassess if we're going to continue. Or is everything in your life just kind of open-ended? You know, when everything in your life is just open-ended, sometimes that can lead you to wonder where the last 10 years went. You know, how did you waste all this time, you know, hoping that something would change? You know, do you have some preset time limits to say, here are some benchmarks that I need to see pass before we continue this any further? These are things you have to decide ahead of time. One of the hardest decisions we've made at a church was to close the Town Center campus and move it back here. But one of the things we said is we would, you know, 100% committed, full bore for 2 years minimum, and it had to be running into a self-sustained place within 2 years. And if it wasn't, you know, we needed to reassess. You know, that was a really hard decision. But you know something? The decision was made ahead of time. It was made ahead of time that if we can't get to the place where it's self-sustaining, because we know there's stats out there that show that if it's not self-sustaining within 2 years, there's a less than 10% chance it will ever be self-sustaining. And so we had to make a decision on which direction are we going to go. But when you've pre-decided, it takes the emotion and the temptation out of it. It's the best way to assure the future that you have is the future that you wanted. If you want to live without regrets, determine what your values are, set your limits, and live by them and stick with them. Would you all please to close our time in prayer? Father, I thank you for your grace over us that continues to cover us. Despite all of our failures, beside all of our faults, I thank you, Father, that your grace covers even over our regrets, that they're not something that we ever have to take with us into eternity. So, Father, may we never lose sight of that and never forget your great love and your grace. And in Jesus' name we pray, amen.